From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Just as the role of women in societies across the globe is shifting, so is the way that women are portrayed in the media. That's because in many cases we're seeing women for the first time in the way they see themselves and their environments, and we're seeing the impact that women can have on media messages when they simply take control of the camera. The 5th annual Ms. Film Festival in Durham is one venue for these productions, from documentaries to shorts to one-woman shows. The festival will showcase more than two dozen works in which women are calling the shots. And joining us in the studio today are Niku Arabi, director of the Ms. Films organization. Niku, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Also with us is Maria Pramaggiore, who is director of film studies at North Carolina State University. Welcome back, Maria.
Thank you.
We're taking your calls this hour as well at 877-962-9862, talking about women in films. And Niku, tell us about the Ms. Films organization. What's it all about?
Well, Ms. Films came about because there is a pretty big lack of a space for women to really have access to the tools they need to make film. They may have access to the field in principle, but if they don't have the tools to be able to make film, the resources to learn about it, or a showcase for their work, it's really not very meaningful. And so we wanted to provide all of that kind of in one organization. And one of the aspects of Ms. Films is the annual festival, where we wanted to bring in filmmakers that would teach what they know, share skills, give some hands-on experience to people of all kinds of backgrounds, women and girls of all ages, and also be able to see films that aren't shown very widely. And a lot of it is because women's films just don't appear in a lot of film festivals, and so the need to showcase them in one place was very important.
Well, I want to go back to something you said earlier about not having access to the tools. Why is that still true today?
Well, I think there are several reasons, but I think it starts with several cultural reasons, including the expectations of young girls. Girls at a young age, they're not expected to learn and use technology in any form, and they're not only that, they're discouraged too. They're told they won't be good at it. And in terms of media, I think they're really encouraged to be in front of the camera and to compete for that space. And there are a lot of expectations involving that, but their voices aren't really invited in the context of media.
Well, Maria Pramaggiore, we might assume as the women's movement has progressed that women have gained more control over their image in Hollywood, but that's not necessarily true.
It's not necessarily true, Frank, and I'm glad you asked that question. In fact, I can throw out some statistics that really speak to what Niku has just said. Women, in terms of their access to the technological tools, as well as the entitlement to tell their own stories, has not necessarily progressed. Between 1912 and 1925, in the silent era, almost half of films were written by women. By contrast, in 2005, of the top 250 grossing films, 12% were written by women. And in fact, again, just to underline what Niku has said, the head of production at Disney, Nina Jacobson, herself said in a recent interview just last fall that when she looks out at her studio and sees productions in progress, she says the training ground for women directors is where they should be. She doesn't see them. She says it's pretty much white guys still
doing it. But wait a minute. Half of the films written between 1912, the whole silent era, those
yes.
earliest films were written by women.
Absolutely.
Now, were they about issues that we might now consider women's issues? I mean, the consciousness must not have been the same at that time.
Right. And you're talking about a very different style of filmmaking, because it's really just becoming narrative film. So there are a lot of short films domestically based. A lot of them look like Victorian stories translated to film.
Why do you suppose it's still true, given the amount of progress that's been made in other areas, if you would agree that some progress has been made? Is the film industry just sort of late in blooming?
That's a really good question. I think there are so many complex factors, because we do have to acknowledge that women have made inroads in terms of executive positions. Four of the six heads of production at the top studios are women. I mean, you've seen people like Sherry Lansing at Paramount, Amy Pascal at Sony. They're in top positions of authority. Where they're not having the impact is at the creative level, mm-hmm. interestingly enough. So the stories that are told, which many people argue, are audience-driven. The demographic is teenage boys, and those are the films. Those executives are even under that imperative.
Well, let me ask Niku about that, about the market for this sort of film. I mean, is that part of the reason that there's simply not the demand for that kind of film?
Well, I think that what Maria said is really important, in that although there's a certain percentage of women who now have positions of power in Hollywood, the fact is that because the power of Hollywood, and really even large budget independence, I would argue, is still in the hands of men, women directors can't afford to try to tell their own stories or make films in the way that they'd like to. And so they end up making films that really are very similar to everything else that's mm-hmm. out there, which is why when you go to an independent festival like Ms. Films or any other one, you see such an incredible variety of topics and genres and themes and the way that they're made and the characters involved and the ways that they look at culture, that you'd never know that there was anything out there if you only were looking at big budget.
So it can have a kind of a spiral effect. It sort of moves the demand. It moves the market as we become exposed to these films, which we should probably do right now. Let's hear a clip. We're not going to see it. We'll hear a clip from one of the short films that's going to be shown at the Ms. Film Festival. This is from a documentary called Trina's Collections. Anika, would you set it up for us?
This is a piece by Ellen Lake, who does great short documentaries. Many are on people's collections, and a lot of them are about everyday people that we wouldn't know. But Trina Robbins, who's featured in this one, is one of the best-known female comic creators, and she's also a historian, I should say.
She makes that point.
Yes, of women in comics, and she is really into women in powerful positions and how they can be represented in media.
And so this film is about her collection. Let's listen.
I call myself a feminist pop culture historian, so my collection has to do with pop culture and with women. That's my interest, is feminist pop culture. It's what I write my books about. Mostly in the room where I work are the things that kind of inspire me the most, that are based on what I do. So I have a lot of superheroine action figures, or just girl action figures. I mean, I have Wonder Woman and I have Xena, but I also have the Powerpuff Girls. But they're all strong girl images.
Powderpuff Girls among the collection that Trina has collected, and it's one of the short films that'll be featured at the Ms. Film Festival next week in Durham. With me on the program today are the director of the festival, Niku Arabi, and Maria Pramaggiore is with us, director of film studies at North Carolina State University. And Maria, let me ask you, if documentaries are an area in which women have more strength, a greater presence?
I would say, in my experience, that is a place where women have had the opportunity to see their work, have their work more widely shown. I think there are probably a number of factors because you don't have that industrial context of Hollywood. And I don't want to devalue the work of women who are working in Hollywood, and there are some really powerful directors. Patty Jenkins, who recently made Monster. Jodie Foster has directed several films. Interestingly, Niku, one of the things Jodie Foster has said is that women aren't allowed to make mistakes, and men are given opportunities to make 2, 3, and 4 mistakes before they get it right. But I would point out, just to the listening audience, they may be familiar with documentaries series that women have made because they've won Academy Awards, for example, Barbara Kopple for American Dream in 1990 and Harlan County, USA in 1976, Into the Arms of Strangers about the Kinder Transport during World War II by Deborah Oppenheimer and Tracy Sheridan, and Born into Brothels, which won last year at the Academy Awards, was directed by Zanna Brisky. So there is, I think, a tradition and a sort of mode of filmmaking and documentary that may be more appealing and accessible to women. It's about developing relationships with your subjects. It isn't about raising a lot of money. It may be low tech, and it can still work.
Well, and I suppose if you're going to normalize the role of women and the position of women in the film industry, you have to start from a very self-conscious point of view, a documentary that kind of looks at issues, and then perhaps it evolves from there into a kind of more mainstream production.
Yeah, and I also think that women have the have a special place, not having access to media and power generally over history. I think we also have a special access to be able to, we have to analyze what's going on. And so we're outsiders, and that's kind of a good and bad thing maybe. And so I think that documentary is a really good example of that, as you said, being really analytical. And I think that, you know, if you are a white man going through Hollywood and you don't have to prove anything, as Maria said, you can make mistakes and it doesn't matter. Whereas, and you don't have to be very thoughtful about it, maybe.
Well, and you're also making an effort to bring young people into the, young women into the film industry. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. I think that, well, there are a lot of reasons why that's important. As we talked about earlier, at a very young age, girls are kind of pushed away from technology and from having their own voice. I think young people in general don't have much of a voice in media. They're targeted a lot, but they don't have much of a voice or much power. And I think that giving girls the chance and being specific that it is for girls so they know that it's for them, and making programs that are specific to what their interests might be. The program that we're featuring at the festival this year, Real Girls.
We'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. I want to hear about Real Girls, Women in Films, on the State of Things, as we talk with our guests Niku Arabi and Maria Pramaggiore about women in the film industry. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. We're talking today about what happens to media images of women when women are behind the camera. The Ms. Film Festival is a showcase for women, and it gets underway later this month in Durham. With us in the studio today are Niku Arabi. She is the director of Ms. Film's organization, and Maria Pramaggiore is the director of film studies at North Carolina State University. And just before the break, we were talking about something called Real Girls, which is part of the festival this year. Niku, tell us a little bit about that and why you added that this year.
Well, this is a really exciting program that is run out of Seattle. And what I like about it, it has a twofold approach, much like Ms. Films does. They not only are putting technology and skills in the hands of young girls, but they also are trying to give them a critical approach to media so that they are looking at the media that's representing them. They are taught by multicultural women media professionals, so they have a lot of perspectives. And they do a theme each year for their projects. This year, the theme is Media for Positive Social Change. So all of their films are looking at how they're represented, how they want to be represented, messages that they want to get across to their peers, and they're doing it in the ways that they choose to.
This can be a particularly difficult sell for young folks, isn't it? Because so much media is targeted at them, and there is a deliberate effort to sort of turn them into consumers and not ever give them the sense that they can actually get into control of this thing. I mean, is it hard to get young folks to realize, oh, wait a minute, I actually can produce these images. I don't have to be the victim of these things.
I actually think that because of that, it is very desirable for young people. I would say anyone, but for young people, because they're so bombarded and they don't have access otherwise. But when they're given the opportunity and the tools, and now, you know, that media making has become so much more accessible and cheap and digital media, and that they can just experiment. They can see if they like it even, but they have the chance to try it out, and that's the important thing. And I think just giving them that chance is really exciting for them.
And Maria, you're saying that this is actually a kind of international phenomenon.
Absolutely. Now, I'd say, you know, Ms. Films is breaking new ground, but also sharing a lot of concerns with women and filmmakers around the world. One very well-known Indian filmmaker, Meera Nair, who made Salaam Bombay, Mississippi Masala, Monsoon Wedding, excuse me, and Vanity Fair, just recently started a program called Maisha. Its first year of operation was last year, and it is for East African and South Asian screenwriters and directors. It's a workshop. She actually invites friends of hers like Spike Lee and Sofia Coppola to come and help people tell their own stories. And a quote from her is, "If we don't tell our stories, no one else will." So I think it's absolutely in keeping with what Niku's been doing with Ms. Films for 5 years now.
And Niku, the other spotlight in this year's Ms. Film Festival is on Indian women filmmakers. Why did you select that group of films for this year's themes?
Well, it kind of came about organically. I started receiving film submissions, excuse me, and realized that I was getting a lot of the strongest submissions were by Indian women directors, and they were they all had really different perspectives and themes that they were exploring, but they were all really strong, and I thought that the best way to put a program together would be to really spotlight them together. I'm really excited about this program.
Now, Maria, India has really a long history of a thriving film industry. We know it today as Bollywood, but it goes back a lot farther.
Absolutely, and there is more than Bollywood to Indian cinema. But just to put it in context, what's interesting about these Indian women filmmakers, whether they're making features or the short documentaries and short films that Niku is showcasing, they're also working against this huge industrial structure, just like women in the United States are in relation to Hollywood. Bollywood films, there are 800 films made per year in India, and 12 million people on the subcontinent go to see a Hindi film daily. So that gives you some idea of the massive industry that they are working within, working around, and so on. But absolutely, there's been a sort of Indian film tradition of the Bollywood musical and the extravaganza that we now know and love so well, seeing Lagan and some other films like that in recent years. But there's also an Indian art cinema tradition that goes back to Satyajit Ray and his film Potter Panchali from 1950, which is seen as adapting European art cinema tradition. So as with many things Indian, you have this masala and this mixture, and it's, you know, brilliant and exciting.
Well, Niku, are you finding from the submissions that you're receiving and the women that you've talked to from India that they're really having to struggle against this sort of twofold, not only the industry, but I would think a long tradition, much longer even than in the United States, in terms of the treatment and traditional roles of women? Is that a theme in Indian film?
I think that it may not be a theme that's explored specifically in the content of the film, but I think that it is something that's a part of all of their experience in some way. Many of the directors in this program are either emigrated to the U.S. at a young age and grew up here, but then grew up kind of in a dual culture with their parents as first-generation immigrants and growing up here, or they grew up here their whole lives. And so they are coming from two different perspectives that in some ways don't mesh very well, but they have certain advantages because they can, from each perspective, be familiar with it and critique the other. And they sort of have an insider and outsider look at both. I think that's really interesting. And another thing that I've found with some of these directors is that they have started out with one path that may be more expected and as in terms of what is an accomplished person. And I think a couple examples are one woman started out in electrical engineering. One woman started out in business, and she got an MBA from Harvard Business School. And now they have decided to completely revamp their careers and become filmmakers. They're very passionate about it. And they have so much to tell, and in so many different interesting ways.
Are there many Indian filmmakers, women in India, from India, who are still there, or are most of them expatriates?
The ones in the program that I received this year are mostly in the U.S. There's one that's in New Delhi. And I think that there are a lot of resources in the U.S. There's a kind of community, whether it's online or it's in certain bigger cities, where there's a lot of support amongst them. And there's actually one website called HollywoodMasala.com, which is very cool. And it has lots of resources for Indian film and media. And I think Maria also was mentioning
a
couple
other. Yeah, there's called SAWNET, South Asian Women's Network, and there's an inordinate number, huge list, long list of women filmmakers. I mean, I'm most familiar with, again, these sort of diasporic filmmakers, these women who have lived in the United States, or like Deepa Mehta lived in Canada. They fall under the NRI, non-resident Indian category, mm-hmm. and they talk about that as sort of being between cultures and seeing a lot about both cultures.
Well, Maria, you talked about the popularity of these films, Bollywood and otherwise, that are coming out of India and about India. And there's a spot in Kerry called the Galaxy Cinema, which is owned by several first-generation Indian immigrants. The cinema regularly shows films in Hindi, mostly the Bollywood kind. Joining us now is one of the owners, Nagi Reddy. Nagi, welcome to the program.
Thank you. What? Glad you meet.
Well, yeah. Thank you for joining us. Mm-hmm. What inspired you to open a theater in Kerry to show Indian films?
I've been here in this country for 20 years, and I opened 10 years ago a grocery store, Indian Spices, and then we've seen more Indians moving in. And then in India, we produce a lot of Indian movies, and Indians need they go to movies a lot because they're the highest time they spend.
Right. So, how do you choose the films for your theater?
Based on the new star cast and the directors. Usually we have big actors like Amitabh Bachchan, Shah Rukh Khan, and nice directors, famous directors, and also we have some. Booking agent, he helps us in picking up the good movies.
And so these are obviously actors and directors who are well-known and popular in India.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that people go largely, you know, the people in Kerry go largely for nostalgic purposes? They really want to see a little piece of home, or are they looking for a different kind of film with maybe familiar faces and voices?
Mostly they go to see the familiar faces, like popular heroes. And also, we miss India, so we have to see some Indian culture back, feel like you are in India when we see all our Indian community in one place, watch a good movie together. Yeah.
It gives everybody a good sense of home.
Good sense of home, yes.
Nagi Reddy, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Nagi Reddy is one of the owners of the Galaxy Cinema in Kerry, the owner of the Triangle Indian Market and the Udupi Cafe as well. Maria, it raises the question about whether or not there's going to be, given the expatriate community, a different kind of film, a demand for a film that expresses not so much nostalgia, but another kind of Indian experience.
I think that's a really good question. I mean, I just want to take a second and put in a plug for the Galaxy because it's such a tremendous institution. I'm so happy it's there. And when I go there, I see not only Indian expatriates going to see the Bollywood films, but some indigenous North Carolinians as well. So I just want to – we're being exposed to that great tradition as well. I think the type of film, I go back to the example of Meera Nair, whose Salaam Bombay and Monsoon Wedding very much look at family structures and social life. Salaam Bombay is about a young boy who ends up living on the street because his family has died. And Monsoon Wedding is a big extended family extravaganza that brings out all of the sort of family secrets. And they are about these radical shifts in tradition that happen perhaps to all of us in this era, in the 21st century now.
And we'll talk a little bit, Niku, talk about one of the films in your festival that deals with women who are displaced, who are one of the documentaries called Foreign Land. Tell us about that.
This is a really neat piece by Remy Carbonda, who interviewed six women who emigrated from South Asia to the UK in the 60s. And I think what's interesting about it and about what you'll hear is they're talking about an experience that now they have the perspective of 40 years since they went through difficult transitions and you know, learn to either they let go or they felt like they always wanted to go back. They had a variety of different experiences that were all challenging, but they also have this long perspective that they're looking at it through.
All right. This is from Foreign Land, a documentary film at the Miz Film Festival.
How difficult it has been with us to cope the life here, because we came with 3 pounds. And we have no relatives here in this country, no home, no sport, nothing.
It was difficult, and I met with a lot of prejudice because I used to wear saris. I had problems finding accommodation, and I would go over, and the minute they saw me in a sari, they'd say, sorry, it's gone.
There were signs like no blacks, no dogs.
From the documentary Foreign Land, a documentary film that will be featured in the Miz Film Festival next week in Durham. And we're talking about that festival today on The State of Things. What's the percentage of documentary films compared with the other kind of feature films and shorts in the festival?
A lot of them are documentary, and that's been the case over the last several years of the festival. And what I like about that is that it is really a chance to see so many different kinds of documentary that it's not just this is an educational piece on PBS and it's going to be have a very certain structure. I think the women who make these, because they are so low budget and they don't have to try to sell it, one might say don't get to, but they have the freedom to really make it the way that they want. And there are so many different ways to document and that is really explored in the films of the festival.
Maria Premaggiore, do you think that festivals like this really have a way of sort of expanding our taste, expanding our expectations about films, and actually change the market?
I think they have the potential to. I see so many film festivals arising. I mean, in some ways it becomes an economic proposition, right? A city puts on a film festival. I mean, that is absolutely happening, and you wonder about who's exploiting whom. But I think what's really interesting to me and what I'd like to see if this is an effect of festivals like Miz Films is the change in our taste from the feature-length format, whether it be documentary or a feature film, to a greater consumption, if you want to use that term, of short films. You know, we have these outlets now through satellite and cable where we're seeing more and more short films being programmed. But that's where, to my mind, the excitement and the fascination of, you know, Indian women or other women or other people telling their own stories is the having access to the digital tools of filmmaking now, but not necessarily the wherewithal to make a 90-minute long film.
Well, and if the tastes are changing, I wonder if there's an advantage to women sort of coming of age, coming into this industry in a larger way at a time when that market is being, more productively explored.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's great opportunities. When I go to the standard multiplex, you're not going to see it there. I mean, and I think that's where most people still see their films.
And in general, we're seeing a lot more documentaries up at the theaters, and sort of everybody's talking about documentaries a lot more now than feature films. Does that in any way help women in the film industry, or is that simply a coincidence?
I think anything that is different kinds of films helps everyone. And anything that's more independent, and I mean, there's independent and independent. There's a $100 budget movie and there are still millions, and that's a big difference. But I think that bringing the documentaries more to the forefront that we've been seeing has been really good because, again, people have been able to see that there are different kinds of documentary and therefore different kinds of film in general than maybe what they've been exposed to. And I think and I hope that it makes them explore a little further than what is kind of handed to them generally.
As we see women's influence grow stronger in the film industry, Maria, do you see their influence sort of more generally applied and informing the mainstream industry? Does it change the way Hollywood filmmakers approach the business?
That's a really good question. I think something has to make a lot of money for Hollywood to change the way it does business. I mean, and it is true that television is an area where women are having more influence on the creative as well as the executive side. Maybe it's because the risks are smaller there. I mean, I think that the literal issue we're dealing with in Hollywood, and again, I go back to Jodie Foster. Someone will think she's my patron saint or something, but I was recently listening to an interview where she said, When the men in Hollywood are risking the huge amounts of money that they're risking to make these films, they want to see somebody who is like them. That gives them a feeling of confidence and trust that they understand what's going on in the process, and that's the way the deals are made.
So, Niku, is there then a risk that talented women who are telling the story of women from a woman's perspective will ultimately just have to be co-opted and become part of that larger industry and stop telling their stories?
Well, I would argue that to an extent that's what has been happening. But I think what the way that I look at the possibilities now is just outside of Hollywood. Pretty much what Maria mentioned, I think television, really important, and then even the internet and everything digital and satellite. There are so many ways now that if you reevaluate what a film is, perhaps, and what your expectations are, we can really communicate all around the world in some important ways. And the question of can I make a movie is different when you consider what a movie is.
So the technology may mean that we don't have to worry so much about Hollywood. There are ways to get the story out.
Right.
Because both the technology is cheaper, it's easier to handle, and the distribution links are not really in the control of Hollywood. I mean, they've got the film chains, but that's there's a lot of other ways to get it out.
Absolutely, and these alternative networks. I mean, the internet is certainly not alternative, but I mean, in my short years at NC State, the number of students I see making projects, short, long, experimental, documentary, narrative films using digital video and finding venues to show them. I mean, we have more film festivals on campus, student film festivals across the country.
Maria Pramaggiore, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Maria Pramaggiore is director of the Film Studies at North Carolina State University. Niku Arbabi is the director of the Ms. Films Organization. Thank you for being with us.
It was a pleasure.
Fifth annual Ms. Films Festival will take place in Durham February 23rd through the 26th. Just ahead, the toughest job in sports. Stay with us on The State of Things.